Perez's question is that you can't defend the human rights of others if you believe the only thing worth fighting for is yourself. Remember this. Much of Europe was perfectly willing to do business with Saddam Hussein and allow him to murder at will, even after he invaded Kuwait in 1990. These days, most of the European press expresses far more outrage over President Bush than they ever did about Saddam or even Osama bin Laden. The truth is that much of Europe will not confront Islamofascism and will not support the United States in the war on terror because that would mean putting their own butts on the line. Yes, I know some NATO countries have provided troops in Afghanistan and that Great Britain, a blessed exception to the European rule, is America's most reliable ally. But when it comes to crunch time against a nuclear-minded Iran or a terrorist-supporting Syria or another 9/11-type attack here or abroad, do you really expect to see most Europeans step up? I don't. Far more than most institutions, the Catholic Church has been able to see and experience firsthand the rise of secular progressive thought and the decline of European power and influence. Yet in the USA, which thus far has rejected the relativist philosophy of the secular progressives, the church is a non-factor in the culture war. Every Sunday at Mass, I pray that will change. It's frustrating to me to sit in the church pew and listen to the priest explain St. Paul's letters to the Corinthians for the 876th time. What I want to know is how St. Paul, a Roman warrior and pagan activist before conversion, would see today's culture war. If Jesus were alive on earth right now, would he be a traditionalist? If so, why? Once in a while, a priest will discuss a social issue from his pulpit, but it's rare. What traditional Americans need desperately is leadership along with a clarification of which traditional values are worth fighting for and why. But don't expect that leadership to come from Washington or your state capital. Like the American Catholic bishops, most politicians fear the culture war. It is too emotional and controversial. Better to lock themselves into a party and ideology than to confront day-to-day issues that directly affect Americans. That would be too messy. And every elected official knows that the secular press would come after them with a vengeance if they enlisted on the side of the traditionalists in the culture war. Because of that prevailing wisdom, conservatives like President Bush and even moderate liberals like President Clinton avoid the culture war almost entirely. And the lesser lights on Capitol Hill follow the lead. No culture war for them. One exception to that rule is Howard Dean. As much as I dislike what the governor stands for, he is an SP warrior front and center. No question about that. In fact, Congresswoman Pelosi and Dean are the two most engaged American politicians in the culture war today. Sadly, they're on the wrong side. One of the political issues that has crossed party lines and trotted onto the culture war battlefield is the gay rights debate. According to a Pew Research Center poll taken in the spring of 2006, 50% of Americans feel that homosexual behavior is morally wrong. Just 12% feel it is morally acceptable, and 33% don't see it as a moral issue at all. But in this area, some traditionalists have chosen to make a stand, and that may be a mistake. Recently, Catholic Charities got out of the adoption business in Massachusetts after that SP state demanded that the Catholic organization actively help gays adopt children, a practice the church opposes. Now, I happen to favor allowing children consigned to foster care to live in a gay home when no other alternative is available. There's no question that children thrive in a loving environment, and there's no question that having a mother and a father is what nature intended. But we live in the real world of the 21st century. If it's between a kid bouncing around a chaotic, sometimes dangerous, child care system and being placed in a stable home with honest people who very much want the abandoned child, I am in favor of the latter. And I'm not basing my opinion on emotion. A variety of scientific studies have shown that kids raised by gay parents usually turn out the same way children in traditional homes do. Remember, the traditional warrior fights with facts. But I will listen to the other point of view, and I'm very interested in hearing exactly why the Catholic Church disagrees with me on this issue. But I've heard little. No solid reasoning was put forth by Catholic Charities other than upholding the church's position that homosexual conduct is wrong. A long time ago, I decided to leave the judgments about sin to the deity. I believe that falls under his or her job description. Since every human being is a sinner, we should all concentrate on healing ourselves, whatever Larry and Lenny and Penny and Connie are doing is none of my business. By the way, privacy is a traditional value. But I do understand that gay marriage has an impact on straight marriage, which, of course, is a bedrock traditional institution. And there's a good reason why American society is built around the traditional heterosexual home. As a societal stabilizer, traditional marriage deserves a special place in our national life. Homosexuality is an alternative situation. There are many other alternative situations, such as polygamy, triads, and whatever Paris Hilton comes up with next. Again, morally, the deity can sort all this out. But the USA, in my opinion, is under no obligation to change the traditional definition of marriage so everybody can feel good about themselves. Now, I realize I'm not telling you something new. According to every poll and actual votes on referendums, as I've noted before, Americans overwhelmingly support the special status heterosexual marriage has in the United States. In my mind, there's no compelling reason to alter that status, especially if the states approve legal partnerships so that citizens are not denied things like hospital visitations, participation in end-of-life decision-making, and insurance coverage. By the way, traditional warriors do not base their philosophy on bigotry, as many SP propaganda merchants charge. We look at what is best for the country. We can see the decency in respecting all legal partnerships Americans choose for themselves. But altering the traditional fabric of society isn't necessary in order to do that. Unfortunately, the Catholic Church, like many other religious organizations, provides none of the above analysis. Its approach to this issue is all based around sin. That approach plays directly into the hands of the secular progressives, who loudly wail that religious intrusion into society is unconstitutional and demonize religious leaders who dare to speak out. Maybe that's why most American Catholic leaders remain silent in the face of the culture war. Like the politicians, they don't want to become targets. The priest pedophilia scandal proved that Catholic leadership was weak. The lack of engagement in the culture war is another demonstration of that. To be fair, a hallmark of the traditional warrior, it is certainly true that if a religious person does wander on to the cultural battlefield, he or she better have a strong stomach, because he or she has a good chance of being demonized. Stanley Kurtz, contributing editor for the National Review Online, sums it up this way, quote, "The fact of the matter is that the left's SP's rhetorical attacks on conservative Christians, traditionalists, have long been more extreme, more widely disseminated, and more politically effective than whatever the Christians have been hurling back. And now that their long ostracism by the media has finally forced conservative Christians to demand redress, the left has abandoned all rhetorical restraint," unquote. Kurtz points to a number of examples. On April 24, 2005, the SP fanatic Frank Rich, writing in the New York Times, compared conservative Christians to George Wallace, segregationists, and lynch mobs. In a similar vein, Christopher Hedges, a former New York Times writer, produced an article in Harper's Magazine called "Feeling the Hate with the National Religious Broadcasters." Hedges patched together a series of vitriolic statements by Pat Robertson and other religious broadcast pundits to selectively paint the picture that the religious right is nuts. This is standard issue for SP magazine writers. Dig up kooky quotes and print them without context. Any writer can do that to any subject. It's simple but off-the-chart dishonest. That is not to say there have not been nutty statements made by the traditional side. Clearly there have been. But think about this. Every time Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson or anybody else on the right goes over the line, it's played big in the mainstream media. But if an SP player uses loony rhetoric, like calling all Americans who oppose gay marriage bigots, well, many in the American media have no problem with that. So to use a cliche, the deck is stacked. That being said, the traditional warrior would be well advised to avoid personal attacks and over-the-top rhetoric. Sure, that kind of thing makes the savage running the savage nation on the radio millions, but irresponsible bomb-throwing doesn't further the traditional cause. The traditionalist warrior should expect to be slimed and defamed and mocked, and should fight back with facts and rational argument. That takes courage and self-restraint. Believe me, I often want to deck those who attack me. That's a natural reaction, but the effective warrior knows the battle will not be won in the mud or by losing control. As I mentioned in the beginning of this book, there's a difference between challenging people on their portrayal of the issues and attacking them by using defamation, rumor-mongering, and name-calling. These are ad hominem, to the man, in Latin, attacks. As a traditionalist who wants to win the fight, I try to avoid the personal stuff. Sometimes I make a mistake, but I know it's a mistake. Win the debate on the issues. Let the smear merchants do the gutter sniping. So you can see that Americans who choose to fight in the culture war will not have an easy time of it. That, of course, is why so many potential warriors remain on the sidelines. In light of that situation, here's one more suggestion to Americans of faith and for other traditionalists, too. There are thousands of good clergy people in the USA who are trying to fight the good fight in the culture war. These people need your encouragement. The Christmas controversy proved that traditional causes can triumph if faith-based organizations mobilize. The companies and groups that sought to diminish displays of the Christmas season were crushed by the opposition. That's how you win the culture war. Speak up clearly and often, then get ready to absorb the slings and flaming arrows. Summon up your courage and confront situations you believe are damaging to your country. By the very nature of its philosophy, traditionalism is on the defensive. We are defending the country we have, while the SPs are working for drastic change that would produce a country they want. In many situations, this is a drawback, as it's easier to fight battles when you're charging. For example, a person who seems to oppose everything will not be the most popular person around the campfire. But someone who wants to take action, make things better, well, that's the person who's admired, right? The SP Brain Trust knows this and has developed a crafty strategy for marginalizing traditional forces in the court of public opinion. The presentation is almost masterly, but as with all SP campaigns, it does have a crippling weakness. Listen up. Chapter 13, As American as Apple Pie? The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me, nothing. The SP Oath, reference to deity deleted by the Supreme Court in the year of our nothing, 2010. Read the following on page 110 of George Lakoff's Elephant Book and weep. Quote, progressive thought is as American as apple pie. Progressives want political equality, good public schools, healthy children, care for the aged, police protection, family farms, air you can breathe, water you can drink, fish in our streams, forests you can hike in, songbirds and frogs, livable cities, ethical businesses, journalists who tell the truth, music and dance, poetry and art, and jobs that pay a living wage to everyone who works. Unquote. Wow, where do I sign up? That progressive vision is amazing. What kind of a Visigoth barbarian would oppose that? I mean, who doesn't want songbirds? What kind of a brutish cad would deny frogs to children? Get me George Soros on the phone immediately. I've got to apologize. Wait a minute, not so fast, overly impressionable culture warrior. After all, we're not taking a political science class at Yale here. This book is real life, no spin. The true picture of what is actually happening in America. Lakoff is a propaganda genius. I'll give him his due. But let's examine his Edenic vision in a methodical, fact-based way. We'll begin with one of the most successful SP tactics. If you oppose their agenda, you're a bad person. A pro-life American is anti-woman's rights. Against gay marriage? Well, you're designated as homophobic and terminally bigoted. Support an aggressive strategy to fight terrorism? You're labeled a warmonger. Worse yet, if you take that stand and didn't yourself serve in the military, you're smeared as a chicken hawk. Nice SP strategy, right? But George Lakoff understands that the primary culture war battle in America is to win hearts and minds. He has no problem with the defame and destroy wing of the SP movement, but his energies are focused more on the positive, thus his apple pie list of SP virtues. So let's start our analysis with political equality. How can we oppose that? Talk about a traditional value. All Americans should have the right to vote and the right to speak their minds about politics without fear of harm. I believe that's guaranteed by the Constitution. And there are legal remedies if violations of political equality occur. Am I wrong? So what is Comrade Lakoff talking about? to unmask the SB agenda in this case, we have to go to the great state of Georgia, where the legislature recently passed a law requiring a voter to produce a valid ID before casting his or her vote. The measure was aimed at stopping voter fraud, that is, people voting more than once, as well as voting by illegal aliens, economic refugees in SP speak. Everybody I know of thought the Georgia law was reasonable. But guess who has opposed that ID law? Hello again, ACLU. We missed you in the last few pages. The SP Vanguard is challenging the legislation in court by arguing it puts an undue burden on the poor. The ACLU asserts that some poor folks don't have official identification papers, and even though Georgia will provide IDs free of charge, it's not fair to demand that a citizen get a valid ID. Does this make any sense to you? The real reason the SPs don't want IDs at polling stations is that it would indeed eliminate the illegal alien vote, which is often cast for liberal progressive candidates. Also, IDs would make it more difficult for people to be bussed to polls out of their districts. This old-style machine politics trick, unfortunately, happens quite often on election day. If I could get George Lakoff on the factor, I'd ask him why his pals at the ACLU are so opposed to the government knowing exactly who's voting. After all, Lakoff says he wants political equality, and that's what one vote per each legal American citizen achieves, does it not? Let's march ahead to the concept of good public schools. How could anyone oppose those? All Americans want children to learn in the best possible way. But the SP definition of a good public school may not be the same as yours and mine. The No Child Left Behind Act poured billions of dollars into America's schools, but at the same time instituted strict achievement standards, testing, to measure whether or not the school was succeeding in educating the kids. In other words, there is academic accountability to go along with the highest educational spending in America's history. But the progressives oppose standardized testing. They also don't want teacher evaluations based upon the academic proficiency of the students they teach. Furthermore, as mentioned, the SPs oppose vouchers to help poor children attend private schools when their own public schools are deficient, and they want students promoted even when they fail in their subjects. So doing even more of the math, this book does demand academic proficiency, what Lakoff and other progressive thinkers consider good public schools are places where teachers nurture rather than challenge children in the classroom. SP schools would embrace the concept of social promotion, where kids move along from grade to grade, even if they can't read or do basic math. The SP educational view features a system where each child is evaluated academically based on his or her potential, not his or her actual achievement. As a former teacher, I can tell you the concept of nurturing is very nice, but it isn't going to get the kid into Princeton or even into many state colleges. Most children are lazy and undisciplined. That's a given, and must be taught to perform in a disciplined manner, as well as develop a thinking process and marketable skills. Discipline and confidence are the key attributes for academic success and indeed success in life. We live in a very competitive society, and all the nurturing in the world is not going to get somebody a good job or help the young person succeed in it, somebody tell Lakoff. Okay, by cutting through the SP bull, you can already see that Lakoff's apple pie list is not what it seems to be. So now on to the next item, healthy children. Again, who doesn't want that? How can that worthy goal be distorted? Ahem. The SP vision, healthy children mantra, goes way beyond supplying a kid with carrots and apples. In the secular progressive world, the healthy child is one who enters the school system as early as possible, is shepherded through childhood by public school nannies, and indoctrinated with progressive values at a very early age. Rob Reiner, the actor-director, is the secular progressive poster boy for this particular philosophy. Until he resigned in the winter of 2005, Reiner headed up the early school programs in California. The organization he was part of is called the California Children and Families Commission. To be fair, the commission does achieve much good, especially for little kids living in chaotic homes who are able to get preschooling free of charge. But Reiner ran into trouble by politicizing the program and running up huge expenses implementing it, including TV ads that promoted his progressive vision. So he had to quit, although expanded preschool ed is here to stay. And there is no question that the SPs are banking on progressive values being instilled into young minds during these early school programs. That is the hidden agenda. Our pal Professor Lakoff next cites care for the aged. Here, he wants the government to pay all the bills for elderly Americans who have limited means. If you oppose that, of course, you are a monster. Universal support of the elderly is a major platform for the advocates of the entitlement society, and lots of senior citizens vote, do they not? So the SPs are trying to get on the fast track by targeting the very young and the very old. Fifth is police protection. If you don't belong to the Crips, the Bloods, or Al-Qaeda, you're surely down, a hood expression, with wanting that. However, progressive policing is far different from traditional policing. As Walter Cronkite and Randy Cohen have aptly demonstrated in previous pages, the SP theorists of justice define crime quite differently than traditionalists do. Remember the restorative justice philosophy we talked about? That's what the SPs want the police to buy into. The rights and well-being of the criminal must be considered by society if true justice is to be achieved. On the family farms issue, I think Lakoff and I might have finally found common soil. I like family farms too, but I don't want to pay for them, just as I don't want to pay for somebody to run a clothing store. Nothing personal, it's just that capitalism requires competition and independent initiative. Although he didn't say it, I believe Lakoff would probably bill me for some agricultural project. As Farmer McDonald might say, E-I-E-I, ouch. The next helping of apple pie slices are environmental. Lakoff and the SPs want clean air, water, forests, and mountains. And yes, they really want lots of frogs and songbirds. Well, so do I. So there. The Lakoff list continues with livable cities and ethical businesses. Those are good things. I hope George can provide them without kneecapping the taxpayer. But somehow I suspect massive taxation would be attached to any plan involving cities that are livable, as opposed to cities that are full of the walking dead. For SPs, those are conservatives. As for ethical businesses, I believe George would like a massive government to directly oversee them. Perhaps Fidel Castro could consult on this project. Now we come to journalists who tell the truth. Uh-oh. This could be bad news for me, since Lakoff is on record as condemning everything that has ever happened on the Fox News Channel. Something tells me old George does not believe I am an honest correspondent. How desperately misguided the professor is. But if George Lakoff could ever force American journalists to tell the truth, I might even send a donation to the ACLU. That is, if he actually starts with a problem truly lies, maybe with the nutty radical left SP bastion, Air America. Good luck, George, and when you're through with them, check out NPR. The Lakoff list winds down with music and dance, poetry and art. As before, it's clear he wants you and me to pay for that wonderful vision in which we'd all be doing the tango and painting socially commendable murals. I wonder what old George thought of that art exhibition in the New York City-financed Brooklyn Museum that featured the Virgin Mary covered with dung. His ACLU buddies had no problem with it. Freedom of expression, you know. And I helped finance that sacrilege with my tax dollars. As for poetry, well, how about this next incident? While serving as the poet laureate of New Jersey, Amiri Baraka wrote a verse blaming the Jews for the attack on 9/11. Taxpayers provided Baraka's hateful forum. Why? Why do regular folks have to pick up the tab for nutty artists? There's plenty of room for artistic expression in the private sector, is there not? What say you, George Lakoff? Finally, for the last piece of Lakoff's apple pie, we are served with jobs that pay a living wage to everyone who works. Pardon me, but isn't this right out of the Mao playbook? Just who determines what that wage should be? Not the actual employer, not on your life. Some government official would decide what Walmart should pay its stock people, and the ruling SP class would make the calls on income inequality. That's called socialism, right, George? So there you have it. In the end, that once sweet apple pie list of great things for America might have a bit of a sour downside if you really analyze what's going on. The menu looks appetizing. The actual meal is quite something else. It is my job as a media culture warrior to sift through the ingredients. That is why you're listening to this book. For all the songbirds and frogs and healthy kids and happy seniors, there would be a huge central apparatus that would have to implement and monitor those things. An impersonal authority that would be extremely powerful and expensive. George Orwell figured that out a long time ago in his Animal Farm book. So did Aldous Huxley in Brave New World, two books that are required reading for the traditional warrior officer corps. And after finishing that reading assignment, you'll know for certain that the SP vision of George Lakoff is indeed a brave new world. Chapter 14, Hating America. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Huey Newton, founder of the Black Panther Party. Roger Ailes is the president of Fox News and a humorous guy. He has been known to attend cocktail parties in Manhattan, a bastion of secular progressive thought, and when an SP person sounds off about the dismal state of the USA, Ailes will sometimes loudly respond, "Why do you hate America?" That's a room silencer, if there ever was one. There is nothing worse you can do to a devoted SP acolyte than to imply that he or she is unpatriotic. I mean, the actor Richard Dreyfuss recently did about 20 minutes on that in front of the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. He was appalled that some conservatives questioned his love of country. For the record, my name was mentioned in the diatribe. But of course, I never questioned Dreyfuss's patriotism or anything else about the man, except perhaps his agreeing to play a character named Dudie Kravitz. In fact, Richard Dreyfuss is absolutely correct in asserting there's no place for personal, rhetorical attacks that charge lack of patriotism. It's flat out wrong to question the patriotism of any American unless there is rock-solid proof that person is trying to damage the country. In my opinion, Dreyfuss is doing nothing of the sort. Remember, there are varying degrees of SP behavior. Some secular progressives, perhaps including the actor, are sincerely committed to improving the USA. They are generally reasonable people who are simply misguided in their beliefs. Others, however, are fanatics who genuinely believe America is a wicked country that must be reformed in any way possible, short of violence in the streets. There are very few SP Huey Newtons. That is what the Soros crowd believes, and they are currently leading the secular progressive movement. So it does happen that members of the two opposing forces, secular progressives and traditionalists, can love and respect their country, but also disagree as to how the country should be run. That situation can lead to lively debate and sometimes to an exchange of valid points. Sadly, however, those interactions are as rare as tax cut proposals from the SP side. Hatred is far more common on the culture war battlefield than detente. A good example of a useful face-off between polar opposites was my interview with Norman Mailer in March 2006. One of America's great writers, Mailer doesn't hate America, but does find it seriously flawed, as you know, a core secular progressive tenet. But Mailer separates himself from the SP garrison because he sees its weakness, selfishness, and relativism. Remember, if you are a relativist, there are no universal truths for you, no judgments about absolute rights or wrongs. Norman Mailer makes judgments all day long. Along with his son, Mailer wrote a book, The Big Empty, in which he expounded on life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. On the Radio Factor, I quizzed him about his essential beliefs and found him conflicted. Most SPs are not conflicted. They are dead certain they are right. But at age 82, Mailer isn't quite so sure anymore that he has the answers. The author frames the culture war argument in liberal-conservative terms, which is a mistake. As I've argued, the true culture battle is us against them, traditionalists versus secular progressives. But old-school Mailer defines the war this way, quote, "A great war is going on here, larger than we realize, between the liberals and the conservatives. The conservatives are saying, in effect, you guys are trying to wreck existence by becoming too vain, too godless. And the liberals are replying, your obsession that God is judgmental looks to force all of humanity into rigid patterns that won't work any longer. The worst is that they are both right. It's a war between extremes, and they are both right," unquote. But Mailer is wrong. Traditional Americans and conservative thinkers who understand their country do not put God at the head of public policy. Nor do we point fingers at the opposition and label them sinners. We label them intellectually deficient. Traditionalists believe that secular progressive policies will weaken America and lead to societal chaos. While we see no reason to banish God from the public square, we don't expect him to be writing social policy on tablets and handing them down to us in the Sinai. Norman Mailer has come to the conclusion that the USA is in decline because traditional thinking and capitalism have uprooted true democratic principles. Mailer told me on the radio that he favors a huge central government that would regulate the profits of corporations and the incomes of Americans. He would like to see social engineering, that is, a society that is forced to be generous and fair. That vision would, of course, require a good amount of totalitarianism, a system Mailer abhors. Finally, like many SP warriors, Norman Mailer sees American power weakening, and he's somewhat happy about it. He explains that on page 105 of Empty. Quote, "It may be that we would do well to recognize, and this will be an odious remark to a great many Americans, that the apex of our power has passed. We are now a very powerful nation in a world of three or four other very powerful nations. If we could make our peace with that, my guess is that terrorist acts against us might diminish, because one aspect of present terrorism is the reaction to our arrogance." Unquote. Of course, the traditional culture warrior, tea warrior, doesn't buy that. I believe that if the USA demonstrates the slightest weakness in the face of Islamofascism, we'll be attacked even more readily. I point to the appeasement of the fanatical Third Reich about 70 years ago to back up my opinion. There's no difference in attitude between the Nazis and the jihadists. Those who do not learn from history are condemned to repeat it. But while I disagree with him, I can see that Norman Mailer clearly defines some very important issues in the intense culture war. The secular progressive movement wants the USA to decline in power. It wants a new world order where global consensus would rule and the superpower model of our time would recede into obsolescence. By contrast, the tea warrior will fight to keep and even increase America's vast power. Why? Because tea warriors understand that the USA is a righteous country that has, in our brief history, freed billions of people from political enslavement. It was our might and money that brought down Tojo, Hitler, and the Soviet Union. As with all nations, America has obviously made mistakes, but we are at our core a noble country in a world full of hatred and violence. If we go into decline, the world will be a much more dangerous place. Can you picture Russia and communist China dominating the world? How about the combined Arab states? But you'll never convince the committed secular progressive warrior of America's nobility. And so the battle rages on. Traditionalists are fighting for their neighborhoods, their country, and their world. Since there's a huge amount at stake, the traditional cause must become a way of life. There are no weekend warriors in this culture war. We are in it to win it, which will require courage, commitment, and discipline. It's now time to get back to basics, to develop a personal strategy designed to keep your family and country protected from those who would do us harm. And that strategy isn't all muscle and bluster. It requires incisive thought as well as action. Two components key to the Tea Warriors' ultimate victory. Chapter 15, The Code of the Traditional Warrior. A scholar warrior is capable of perceiving right and wrong in an all-too-gray world and is just as capable of defending on the basis of that unstinting belief. Deng Ming Dao. The Chinese philosophy of Dao, meaning something like the pathway, is a personal discipline that aspires to selfless, honorable living. The committed Taoist attains scholar-warrior status after much study and accomplishment in both the martial arts and enlightened thought. Because Taoists are definitely traditionalists, it may be useful for you to learn something of their culture. They believe in the dignity of humanity and adamantly oppose harming the innocent. Thus, terrorists need not apply. They also despise self-destruction, deceit, and the exploitation of others. Taoists form strong judgments about behavior and live by a strict code of right and wrong. Thus, moral relativists need not apply. Although much different from the traditional warrior in his or her ultimate goals, the scholar warrior has one thing all traditional warriors should have: a code to live by. This is extremely important because if you can master a personal life code of honor, you will not only develop the strength to influence others, but also you'll win many of the personal battles you will inevitably have to fight in this life. For example, in my 10 years of waging the culture war in the media, I have seen dishonest behavior from the SP side almost every day of my life. Many of those people are rank liars and first-class manipulators. As I said in the beginning of this book, I truly despise the people who run the smear websites or who use their positions in the media to injure rather than inform. I've described some of their behavior in this book, but believe me, I could write 10 books about their disgraceful conduct. Very important, don't be like them. Some traditionalists, but more often fanatical conservatives, fall into the trap of using unethical tactics against the SPs. Don't you? The worse the SP forces behave, the more noble you should strive to be. As I mentioned earlier, smear merchants play only to their choir. Fair-minded Americans will not be persuaded either way by vicious personal attacks. Those are used by people who cannot win the debate intellectually. So in this final chapter, let's discuss the righteous and somewhat rigorous code of the traditional warrior. I want to begin by pointing out that the code is the same for both women and men because women are some of the most effective tea warriors. That might be because of child rearing. Traditional women understand vividly how the SP philosophy causes confusion and poor decision-making among kids. Of course, there are SP moms out there like Susan Sarandon, but they are heavily outnumbered by traditional mothers. Thank God. The cornerstone of the traditional warrior's code is to do what you say you are going to do. I've touched on that principle in my previous books, but it's vital for the traditionalist to understand that what you do, not what you say, defines you. Each day of your life should be devoted to fulfilling your responsibilities right down to the most insignificant. Even if it's a little thing like saying you'll call somebody. Well, call them. Don't say stuff and then not do it. That's sloppiness of character, and it can become habit-forming. It's very important for the tea warrior to be a person of honor, to be a stand-up guy or gal. What does that mean? Well, by being stand-up, you tell the truth and defend your principles in public, even if they're unpopular. Now, you don't have to become a Jehovah's Witness going door to door, but what you say should always mean something when you do decide to speak. Think about it. There's nothing worse than going to a place like Los Angeles and having people say, "Hey, let's do lunch, babe." Is there anything worse than that? I don't know of one tea warrior who's ever said anything like that, but plenty of SPs have. It's the dead giveaway of a creep. Rejecting phony jargon is yet another reason to leap over to the traditional side. But seriously, if you tell somebody you'll do something, do it. People who honor their commitments and reject BS are impressive people. They actually stand for something. They stand for their word. No matter what they do for a living, their lives have meaning. So the traditional code starts with you, the tea warrior, doing what you say you'll do. Simple, but powerful. And then there's a daily fight against selfishness, an essential rule of the code. Unlike the SP acolyte who worships at the altar of self-fulfillment and often looks to other people, the government, to make that happen, the traditionalist tries to help others before pursuing personal gratification. As the Tao philosophy teaches, selfishness destroys compassion for one's fellow human beings and leads to greed and mistrust. It's ironic that the SP philosophy of humanism, a secular emphasis on the needs of human beings, leads them to embrace lenient criminal penalties for violent offenders, the destruction of fetuses, babies, in the abortion process, and a permissive view of substance abuse that corrodes body and soul. The traditionalist understands that true feeling for others requires a helping hand that leads to problem solving, not the collapse of standards that would make it easier for people to destroy themselves and others. Tea warrior alert! Withstanding selfish impulses is a large part of the traditional code. Next, the effective tea warrior has to see the world the way it really is. Yes, this can be downright painful. Every human being has a tendency to indulge the impulse of wish fulfillment. We want that attractive person to be good and decent, even though he or she is not. We want that role model to be flawless, even though at times everybody commits errors. Sometimes our most fundamental preconceived notions turn out to be dead wrong. In those cases, we have to be disciplined and smart enough to admit it. The stringently disciplined tea warrior must be a persuader, not a Kool-Aid drinker. If you watch or listen to my programs, you know I use that phrase a lot. It's inspired by a cult leader named Jim Jones, who in 1978 convinced about 1,000 people to commit mass suicide by drinking a poisoned Kool-Aid-type drink in the country of Guyana. Those poor souls would do anything Jones told them to do. They had no minds of their own, and after drinking the cyanide and Valium-laced drink, no breathing bodies either. Thus, I use the term Kool-Aid drinkers to describe people who blindly follow any ideology or religion. That's not the tea warrior. In order to be effective, we must have our eyes wide open at all times. Things change quickly in America. For that reason, no one ideology or belief system can be correct in every matter. The clear-headed warrior, who uses fact-based arguments rather than boring mantras, Bush lied, will win people over. As I mentioned, the zombie-like hateful warrior who spouts cliched propaganda will drive reasonable folks away. All fanatics hurt whatever causes they're attached to. Don't be like Mike Moore, looking to create or distort situations to fit your ideology. Don't be a savage, selling hate as entertainment. No, see the world the way it is and try to apply traditional thinking to solving vexing problems. That is the road to victory. The next aspect of the traditional code is vital. Stand up for your country. You can't be part of the traditional force unless you truly believe the USA is a noble nation. And if you study history and look around you, that's not a difficult conclusion to reach. Why do millions of people from all over the world attempt to get into America any way they can? At least 12 million undocumented aliens live in the USA right now. Why do most American citizens have more opportunity than do our peers in the rest of the world? Why are you free to do pretty much whatever you want this evening? The answer is freedom and a social structure that allows the intense pursuit of happiness for responsible, hardworking people. I'm the poster boy for that truth about American life. As I was growing up, many in my Levittown neighborhood thought I'd eventually do time in Attica prison. Really? But I eventually wised up, worked hard, established a traditional belief system, and was able to reach my potential. If I can do it with my rather questionable personality, believe me, almost anyone can do it. I'm not a popinjay, but I can come darn close. As a traditional warrior, therefore, I clearly understand from experience that my country has given me an opportunity to prosper. As much as I love Ireland, the land of my forebears, I don't believe I would have succeeded on a grand scale there. The opportunities in America are far more diversified than they are in Ireland, or for that matter, anywhere else on the planet. If you are tough and persistent, you will get a number of chances to succeed in the USA. So I do truly respect my country and do not, like some of my SP opponents you've met in this book, believe it's an evil, oppressive enterprise. I do understand that some corporations are brutal. But at the same time, many American companies also provide life-sustaining benefits and opportunities for millions of people. True freedom means choosing between worthy enterprises and exploitative ones. There's definitely a dark side to the USA, but the tea warrior learns how to put that truth in perspective. After all, there is definitely far more light than darkness in America, and you are free to walk away from or to try to improve most pernicious situations. But excuses walk. To be effective in the art of persuasion, tea warriors must also recognize that the USA has made mistakes in both domestic and foreign policy. Again, that's a small part of the overall picture, but it's there. Tea warriors are not an America right or wrong group. In my lifetime, the basic desire of the American government has been to provide people with freedom and the opportunity to better themselves. Even in Iraq and Vietnam, Americans fought on the side of freedom. So the downside of the USA is minuscule compared to what is noble about the country. That belief is a hallmark of the traditional warrior. We can certainly improve the USA, but if you want a completely different landscape, I am your ardent opponent. For the next element of the code, I'm suggesting an unemotional examination of religion. This may come as a surprise to some, but you do not have to believe in God to be a traditional warrior, although the vast majority of us do acknowledge a higher power. But the code, as far as religion is concerned, is secular. Here's the twist. T-Warriors believe the USA was founded on Judeo-Christian principles that have provided a foundation for freedom and justice. The revisionist secular progressive historians run around claiming the founding fathers were not at all influenced by Judeo-Christian philosophy, that their intent was to create a country where spirituality was a private matter. That is absolute nonsense, pure and simple. Just read the words of the Declaration of Independence and you'll see that the revisionists are lying. The founders wanted to construct a God-fearing country for very practical reasons. They knew the infant federal government couldn't control the growing population and therefore counted on the influence of Judeo-Christian tenets to keep the first Americans in line. Remember, in the initial days of the Republic, folks largely policed themselves and established local order based upon widely accepted beliefs. There was no supposed separation of church and state. That immense piece of false but effective propaganda was dumped on America in the late 20th century by the ACLU. The only demand the founders made in the religious arena was that no American legal apparatus could force a citizen to believe or worship in a certain way. Otherwise, the founders encouraged public prayer, spiritual holidays, and a strong public belief in a benevolent creator. That is the God's honest truth. Sorry, SP fanatics. And I can back it up all day long simply by pointing to public documents that are on display in the Smithsonian. Now back to the code. The traditional culture warrior understands that a clear definition of right and wrong is imperative for a disciplined society that protects its citizenry. One of the outrages of modern America is the SP's philosophy of confronting harmful behavior by providing a variety of excuses for it. For example, the abuse excuse, whereby criminals become objects of sympathy because they themselves were abused. That's taken deep root in the United States. As I explained earlier in these pages, we are now seeing the most repulsive acts, like the rape of children, being understood. Instead of harsh punishment for child abusers, some judges are opting for lenient sentences and the option of treatment for felons who destroy children. This is the most egregious example I can provide of secular progressive justice. Almost 100% of the time, the politicians, lawyers, and media who oppose strict mandatory sentences for child sexual predators are banner-waving soldiers in the SP camp. By contrast, the traditional culture warrior believes in the Judeo-Christian code of forgiveness, but with punishment and with penance. True justice demands that the punishment fit the crime. We in America must continue to uphold standards of behavior that protect people, especially children and the elderly, from harm. Civilized conduct is not relative. In the American Republic, the people decide what acts are wrong, illegal, and those acts must be punished accordingly. That code of justice, historically based upon Judeo-Christian principles, is one the SPs would tear down. Traditional warriors must prevent that from ever happening. The traditional code goes on to include respect for private property. This is another core issue. I remember once asking the SP actor Warren Beatty, a very smart guy, if he believed in income redistribution. Beatty answered that he very much did. He favors allowing bureaucrats and politicians to remove money from the affluent, including himself, and then give it to others less well off. As we've discussed, the secular progressive belief that the government, not the American citizen, should hold ultimate power over private property is one of the most dangerous aspects of the secular progressive agenda. This is what the slogan, tax cuts for the rich, is all about, a way of suggesting that reduced taxes for all Americans is somehow a kind of theft from low-wage earners. The concept of eminent domain, the government's seizure of private property for the greater public good, is also a stark indication of the SP desire for centralized control of private property. Simply put, traditional warriors will defend private property. If you pay taxes on your money, your land, your home, your stuff, then it should be yours forever. No pinhead public official should be able to take it away from you. This is why the so-called death tax is an abomination. After an American dies, Congress is deemed it can seize more than half of the deceased person's property if he or she is wealthy. I believe that is stunningly unconstitutional, and it certainly is a very swift redistribution of wealth. In defense of such actions, the SPs will point to the right of taxation written into the Constitution. And it's an easy play to convince most voters that the rich should pay the vast amount of taxes in America. After all, the rich have much more than most Americans will ever have. So who's going to feel sorry for them? No one, and no one should. As a wealthy person, I believe I have a responsibility to pay more of my earnings in taxes than most other Americans pay, and also to give large amounts of money to charitable causes. I have no problem with that, unless the taxation becomes punitive or is repeated, as it is in the death tax situation. Let's be brutally honest here. Tea warriors simply do not believe in social engineering and income redistribution. I feel it is morally wrong for a distant government agency to take my hard-earned money and hand it over to someone else unless the person is simply not capable of caring for him or herself. Once again, if we want to turn America into a socialist republic, let's vote on it. But this tax the rich mantra is getting out of control. Socialism has never worked anywhere in the world, and traditionalists understand that. But the secular progressives don't care. They want economic equality. It's amusing to watch mass demonstrations in France every time that hapless government there tries to institute new work rules. As stated earlier, the French government recently passed a new law that would allow companies to fire new employees under the age of 26 during the first 2 years of their employment. The authorities came up with that policy because the economy of France is moribund, no growth at all. That's because companies don't want to hire young workers knowing they can't fire them, no matter how useless they turn out to be. Naturally, the SPs in France took to the streets in protest because they love that kind of worker protection, even when it results in economic stagnation, which it inevitably does. And naturally, French President Jacques Chirac, a champion of SP thinking, backed down. France rescinded the new law. In America, traditional warriors must fight against the governments running the economy and regulating what people earn. The USA has dominated the world economically because we, the people, are ambitious and are free to move up the economic ladder if we work hard and experience a bit of luck now and then. The SP vision is that the nanny state will dictate what we have, and it will be based on broad prosperity. That's SP code for a guaranteed government-provided lifestyle, something the young French can't do without. If you oppose that government guarantee, you will be branded insensitive and hostile to the working man and to the poor. But the truth is that the code of the traditional warrior encourages generosity, philanthropy, compassion, and moderation in the pursuit of material things. However, it rejects the seizure of private property and the looting of the affluent. Class warfare is a strategy the SP forces use very well, but that warfare goes against what America was founded on: the freedom to compete in the marketplace without governmental interference. Personal ambition has strengthened America and led to incredible opportunities for hundreds of millions of people. The traditional warrior understands that and rejects the voodoo economics of income redistribution. It didn't work for Fidel or the Sandinistas, and it won't work for the SPs. So, as you can see, the code of the culture warrior encompasses many things: ethical behavior, theory, spirituality, a realistic worldview, and a determination to fight for the soul of your country. Obviously, full engagement in the culture war demands energy and commitment, courage and persistence. You will be challenged. You may even be attacked and threatened. This culture war is not for the timid. Traditional preparation for a shooting war requires a strict physical regimen to build up stamina and strength. If you've served in the military, you know how difficult basic training can be. You build up your body and mind to absorb whatever the enemy will throw at you. Training to fight the culture war requires more mind than body work. It's not just about absorbing knowledge, although that's very important. It's also about adopting an ethical life philosophy. As Deng Mingdao writes, it takes a strong person to be ethical, for ethics are standards you may decide to follow even when others do not agree. Unless you are completely in control of your life and have a great deal of discipline, you cannot be ethical. That's what separates the traditional warrior from his or her SP counterpart, that strong emphasis on personal discipline and control of your actions. While the SP Corps practices relativism and theorizes about nurturing everyone, including the most horrendous among us, the T warrior chooses a belief system that realistically benefits society as a whole and tries to implement it with fairness and compassion. T-Warriors do make judgments, but based only upon strong evidence. T-Warriors believe society must protect the weak and look out for individual rights, but strictly within a framework of emphasizing personal responsibility and accountability. While the SP brigades clamor for legalized drugs, unfettered destruction of human fetuses, euthanasia, rehabilitation instead of criminal punishment, vastly more freedom for minors, parity for alternative lifestyles, for sharing of personal assets, a one-world consensus on foreign policy, banishment of spirituality from the marketplace, and other enlightened social policies, the T-Warrior understands the erosion of societal discipline that those policies would cause, and thus rejects them. But T-Warriors are not just naysayers. Like the Taoist scholar warrior, we are champions, defenders and protectors of a noble country, and of people worldwide who are decent, well-intentioned, and generous. T-Warriors adamantly support something that has succeeded for 230 years, the American constitutional concept of freedom and justice that allows individuals to prosper and help others. So there you have it, the code of the traditional warrior. To review, let's break it down into 10 pithy segments. 1. Keep your promises. 2. Focus on other people, not yourself. 3. See the world the way it is, not the way you want it to be. 4. Understand and respect Judeo-Christian philosophy. 5. Respect the nobility of America. 6. Allow yourself to make fact-based judgments. 7. Respect and defend private property. 8. Develop mental toughness. 9. Defend the weak and vulnerable. And 10. Engage the secular progressive opposition in a straightforward and honest manner. Words for all T-Warriors to live by. Central Command, CENTCOM, final mission statement. Life is tough, you know that. There are people you love and people you loathe. Every day of your life, bad things happen. But the strong person soldiers on and consistently turns negatives into positives. Sometimes it's true. I wish I were not a traditional warrior. The fight is hard and exhausting. If you've followed my career at all, you know I've become a major target. Believe me, things were a lot easier when I was running around the globe reporting news stories. I'm not complaining, just bloviating a little. As I've shown, I've taken on some very powerful interests in the USA, and they are not at all pleased. It's been 10 years now since I began this fight. Mostly I've won. My programs are hugely successful. My books are bestsellers. But I've paid the price, and so have those around me, because the amount of hatred directed my way is staggering. Still, I have chosen my own path and don't regret it. A decade ago, the Fox News Channel and The Factor did not exist. Think about what America would be like now if we had not arrived on the scene and provided Americans with an alternative to the strongly SP-established media. Over that same span of time, the secular progressive movement has acquired a tremendous amount of money and power. They do not yet own the hearts and minds of most Americans, but they do have the resources, especially by controlling the media, to change that situation. So each American has to figure this out and understand that today's culture war, along with the war against terror, will define this country for decades and maybe generations to come. Think about all the changes you've seen in your lifetime. My grandparents were born in a time when cars didn't exist. The amount of progress we've all seen is incredible. As with most things, some of that change has been terrific, and some of it horrific. Therefore, it is our commitment as T-Warriors to hold on to the good and destroy the bad. Because we do make judgments. Traditional people are in a good position for that task, but only so long as our judgments are sound and based upon the true philosophy of America. So that is the mandate of the mighty T-Warrior. I hope as more and more Americans begin to understand what's at stake, that the traditional forces will grow in power and influence, and we'll all win the culture war and win it quickly. This may be wishful thinking, but hey, traditionalists can nurture that kind of optimism, right? But even if I'm wrong and the unthinkable happens, that is, the United States evolves into a secular progressive country, I'll know that I have fought on the side of the angels. I will have fought the good fight and will have fought it honestly. Also, I will always have insights the SP legions will never have. That is, there is a right and wrong in this world. There is justice and fairness. And finally, there is a strong, binding tradition that has made America the most successful country the world has ever seen. Let's keep it that way. Thanks for listening to this book. This is Bill O'Reilly. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Culture Warrior, written by me, Bill O'Reilly. The program was produced and directed by Robert Kessler. Executive producer, Sherry Huber. Text copyright 2006 by Bill O'Reilly. Production copyright 2006, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.